The world is a crazy place right now. Helen Ziller is the chair of the FedEx at the Democratic Alliance. Helen, we're getting a glimpse into the way that your life runs as per normal. I guess it's business as usual to have this kind of drama that you're dealing with. It feels to those of us outside who are now watching that it's almost like the whole world is on a knife edge, and South Africa even more so. But where are we right now? Where is South Africa, and should we be worried?
Well, obviously, Trump's tariffs are having an enormously negative effect on us. Trump wants to stop South Africa from being a connector country for the exports, for example, of Mercedes-Benz out of East London, because many other countries have brought jobs to South Africa by making use of South Africa's AGOA status internationally. And that has helped us enormously by creating a lot of jobs. By slapping such high tariffs on us, I think if I recall, it's 25% on South Africa, it makes it very, very difficult to export our goods or any other goods from people who've invested and built factories in South Africa to the United States of America. And that is going to have an enormously negative impact on our economy. So we're bracing for that. And we've seen the whole world reacting to President Trump's announcements, especially in the last 24 hours.
You have sent a delegation to Washington, and we now hear that a business delegation has been there as well and returned. Is there any brightness in the gloom?
President Trump is dead opposed to any race-based legislation in South Africa and any indication of the persecution of minorities. Now, we also don't think that race-based legislation is helpful in a supposedly non-racial democracy. And we also are completely opposed to discrimination and oppression on minorities. That's why we were appalled by the Constitutional Court judgment that said, kill the Boer is not hate speech. Of course, it is hate speech in our opinion, and I think in most people's opinion. So those kinds of things are worrying. But we don't believe that all South Africans should be punished. And the people who are going to be the most profoundly punished are the people who are going to lose their jobs in car factories, are the people who are going to lose their jobs on the farms of the Western Cape and other places, because we, for example, export lots of citrus to the United States and other agricultural products. So the workers are going to be hardest hit by these measures, and this is the tragedy for South Africa.
Yeah, BMW, 50% of their production in South Africa goes into the US market, and of course they'll be priced out of it immediately. And the numbers, I did some work on them the other day, were 23 billion rands worth of exports. So this is a very serious thing. But on the other hand, those who have got connections into Donald Trump and co say he can be a very good friend. We haven't even explored that opportunity yet. Is there anything within the Government of National Unity, we'll talk about that in a moment, which could maybe change that or turn that around so that America starts supporting us rather than punishing us?
We have to box very smart, because we are not important to America. Minority rights are massively important to Donald Trump in South Africa. But our economy is of absolutely no significance in the American scheme of things. And so we should not think that we can retaliate at an economic level that'll give the USA a bloody nose. We have to box very, very smart here. And boxing smart would be, for example, not to increase tariffs to impossible levels, but to reduce tariffs, especially on products that we don't make in South Africa, to encourage many people to invest in South Africa so that we can start making up for a lot of the trade we will lose to America. So here we've got to do some very serious calculations, no knee-jerk reactions, proper economic analysis, thinking over the long term, because that is what it'll take.
Cool heads. What about the GNU? GNU, at the moment, we're told that the DA is moving out or pulling out. There's all kinds of heat around the conversation after the budget. Are you able to bring some cool heads into that discussion as well?
We always have cool heads. We went into the GNU in order to share power. That is what coalitions do all over the world, Alec. No one goes into a coalition to be sucked up by the larger party and prop them up because they didn't get enough votes in the election. And in countries where coalitions work, the bigger party and the smaller party accept that a coalition means power sharing. The ANC sadly does not accept that. As they've often said, this is just a tactical move until they get above 50% again. They don't understand that the DA is in the GNU to share power, but most critically to get South Africa's economy back on a growth path so that we can create more jobs. And to get growth, you have to have investment. And we have to make sure that we do everything possible to make South Africa an investor-friendly destination. And the DA sees crucial economic reforms as being at the heart of that quest. By the end of the GNU, if we are to make any impact at all for the betterment of South Africa, we have to be able to say in 2029, well, we brought down unemployment by X percentage. We created X thousand new jobs, etc., etc. And then our participation in government would have been worth it. The ANC doesn't want to.
The big issue, though, is, and I had a very close look over the last few days at the by-election results, which were really, it's the DA has been losing ground there, not in the staunch DA areas, but subsequent to this more hard line that you took on the budget, suddenly the by-elections seem to be doing a lot better for the DA. But it was... There might have been those who are saying the GNU hasn't really worked in your favor up until very recently when you stood up against the VAT increase.
Well, no one likes their party to be subservient to a bigger party in the coalition. Our voters do want us to stand up and fight for their interests. Now, we won't just do knee-jerk fighting either. We will evaluate every situation and determine what we need to fight for and what we need to win and what is winnable. Coalitions are very complex and very difficult. And in the by-elections that we lost ground in, you've got to understand that these were by-elections, or one by-election in particular, in a place where our councillor had been very ill for years. And for several reasons, we didn't want to be that cruel and that cold to move him out at the critical stage of his life. And he died, and he had left an unserviced ward. Now, even though we put in a proportional representation councillor to make up the gap, it's very difficult to compensate for an absent ward councillor. And that is where the other parties got their foot in the door very substantially. So these are the kind of things that obviously hit us hard. And in those very marginal seats where we won previously on 29% of the vote because the vote was so split across many parties, then we're going to feel the pain, and we did.
Let's focus, if we can, on the VAT story, the DA standing firm against it. What are your plans now going forward?
Well, the DA never only has one track in a fight. We try and have multiple tracks, multiple fallback positions. Obviously, plan A was to win concessions in political negotiations. I saw, ironically and quite cynically, that Paul Mashatile said we're in the GNU on the basis of the statement of intent that we both signed. That is true, but the ANC has never once respected any of the clauses of the statement of intent. Most particularly not Clause 19 and 19.3, which define sufficient consensus on all GNU decisions. And equally on the budget, they've ignored it because they said it's our way or the highway. And you know, we're not going to give any compromise to you, although we're going to ask for a lot of compromises from the DA. And so this was very, very difficult. And where we are now is this. We have moved from the first track, which is the political negotiation track, to the second track, which is the legal track. We have always had the legal track in abeyance, but you don't want to move onto the legal track unless you've absolutely exhausted all other options in the political track. Now we're on the legal track. We think we have the best possible chance to interdict the VAT increase and to have Clause 7.4 of the VAT Act declared unconstitutional. And that is what we're working very hard to achieve. And in that way, we will stop the VAT increase.
Would you explain it in terms that your voters can understand what it is that you are asking the courts to do here?
Section 7.4 of the VAT Act says that the minister can announce in Parliament that there will be a VAT increase and that it will take effect on the day that he announces, irrespective of whether or not Parliament supports the budget. Now, in this case, Minister Godongwana got up and announced that there would be a 0.5% VAT increase from the 1st of May. It then transpired that he couldn't get his budget through Parliament. But nevertheless, the 0.5% VAT increase is going ahead on the 1st of May because that is the power that the law gives him. Irrespective of whether or not Parliament supports his budget, he can, by way of announcement, effect a VAT increase. Now, our argument is that that is unconstitutional because it effectively gives the minister legislative powers. He gets up and, by virtue of an announcement, makes a law. Now, that violates the principle of the separation of powers. The executive can't make a law. The executive can only implement the laws and execute the laws. That's why they're called the executive. And so we're arguing that that is unconstitutional and he should never have announced a VAT increase and bring it into play when he could not get the budget through Parliament.
But now that he has got the budget through Parliament, wouldn't it be a pyrrhic victory even if the courts were to rule in your favour?
No, because we have a situation in where we believe that the announcement was irregular in various respects, and we believe that we can still interdict the VAT increase.
Okay, but I suppose the biggest story, and you are going to be meeting...
A crucial thing, of course, is the process in the Portfolio Committee. That's absolutely critical to this whole argument, because the process in the Portfolio Committee was entirely irregular, and the Portfolio Committee never voted, actually, on the fiscal framework in its totality at the end. So the document that appeared before Parliament had not been approved by the Portfolio Committee. And that is another fatal procedural flaw which we're going after. We look at both process and substance, and we go after whatever we can when we switch to the legal track.
Interesting. When you get the right processes in place, everybody knows where they are and then knows if they don't follow them, what the consequences are. But as far as the GNU is concerned, this is many people in the business community are worried. We've seen the rand fall when every other emerging market currency has actually risen against the US dollar. The dollar's been being tumbled. So there is a direct correlation between what's happening in South Africa politically and what's happening to the currency or our share price. How are you reading this and what are the pointers for us now to look out for?
Well, the markets really like the GNU. And investors are saying no GNU, no investment. And we hope the ANC is getting the message. Because we're good at opposition, we do it well. And we're not simply going to stay in the GNU to prop up the ANC implementing its policies in the way that it feels like. We are in the GNU to get South Africa back on a growth path, growth and jobs, which is a large part of the reason that the markets like the GNU, because they know with the DA in there, we'll be getting rid of corruption, we'll be applying investor-friendly policies to get investment, growth, and jobs, and that South Africa has some prospects. And if the ANC wants to kick us out at the same time as we have Trump piling on the tariff pressure, the ANC is going to be responsible for a recession, the likes of which we have rarely seen. So let them also take this message on board. The DA is not there as a gopher for the ANC. We are there with 22% of the vote to exercise the mandate of our voters to serve South Africa and to get more people into jobs.
So from what you've said now, it would tend to confirm the talk that the DA is not going to leave the GNU. In fact, that the ANC is going to have to make the decision to kick the DA out. Is that accurate?
No, I'm not necessarily saying that. It depends on the terms that the ANC puts on the table. All of these things are about the divisions in the ANC. The ANC is profoundly divided. Paul Mashatile wants the DA out of the GNU because they want Cyril Ramaphosa out of the ANC. And this is all about factionalism in the ANC, which is a many-headed hydra. Some people in the ANC say, please allow the DA to stay, but make them forfeit two cabinet posts, which is a joke because we are already, in terms of the agreement, three cabinet posts short. Then there are others who say, kick them out immediately without let or hindrance. And there are others who say, let them stay because the alternative is too ghastly to contemplate. So the ANC is deeply divided, and they're deeply divided around their own internal succession dynamics. Paul Mashatile wants to succeed Cyril Ramaphosa, and they have an elective conference in 2027. Fikile Mbalula wants to succeed Cyril Ramaphosa, and he's up against Paul Mashatile. And so I can continue. The ANC only think of themselves. They have an absolute dearth of talent. They have a succession battle in the middle of a dearth of talent. And here is the DA saying, listen, forget your internal fights. We're trying to rescue South Africa. That is our mandate. And let's look at how we do that.
And what about the smaller parties? You've often said, beware of giving the smaller parties a power because they will turn against you. Your predictions appear to have been brought to fruition this time around.
Well, they always do. I mean, the thing is that, look what happened. Action SA said, oh, no, they'd be a very reliable partner to the DA. They hate the ANC. They'll never put the ANC in government. Well, they did that in Tswane. They did that in Ekurhuleni. They did that in Johannesburg. And they've now done it at national level because they think that if they get the DA out there, they can get cabinet posts. I feel most sorry for the people who were fooled by Songeso Zibi and by Musi Maimane, for example. They were also going to be this robust opposition, less robust than the DA, obviously, because that's apparently a problem that we've got, that we're a bit too robust. But nevertheless, what have they done? When we would try to get a decent power-sharing deal from Panyaza Lesufi in a government of provincial unity in Gauteng, in Gauteng, what did Songeso Zibi and Rise South Africa do? They jumped in with Panyaza Lesufi, and they enabled him to put together a government again without the DA and completely took away our leverage of negotiation. So everybody in Gauteng who voted for Rise Mzansi actually voted for Panyaza Lesufi.
Helen, just to close off with, South Africans are very confused. They are worried. They've seen the share price of the country fall sharply when other emerging market share prices have gone up, to keep it in real basic terms. What message would you have for them now? Keep cool heads, perhaps?
Well, always keep cool heads, but get the political message. You've got the economic message. Get the political message. In next year's local government election, the DA can emerge as the biggest party in all the metros. If we do that, we hold the cards, we get the executive mayoral positions, and we can rescue the economy from the base of the major cities. We can replicate the Cape Town story in other metros and in other provinces. That is the lesson to get. That unless you get the right governments, your investments will always be precarious.
And your message to the business community, given that they really want you to stay in the GNU, butt out like Ramaphosa is saying to them?
Now, I'm not saying to them that they must butt out. I'm glad they're interested. It's worse if they're not interested. I mean, I like everybody to be interested in the future of the country so that we can discuss the key messages with them. Obviously, I understand that they are interested in protecting their investments, protecting their profit margins, protecting all of the above. And that's useful because it helps South Africa to succeed if they are that invested in South Africa. That's very valuable. But what I do want to tell them is that we have to think of the medium term. The most critical crisis for South Africa would be the collapse of the DA. Then there's really no hope for this country, none at all. And we cannot be beaten into submission by an ANC that wants us to be their lackeys and just prop them up in government because they didn't get enough votes so that they can implement the dire ANC policies. We're not about to do that. And they must understand that asking that price of us is too high. We have to make sure that the DA can sustain its base and grow and become the biggest party in all the metros, because that over the medium term is the only way we can rescue South Africa's economy and their investments. So please don't demand anything that will see the demise of the Democratic Alliance, because you might get short-term gain for long-term deep, deep pain.
I was ahead of this conversation, having a look at the Smoot-Hawley tariff regime that was introduced in the United States in 1929 and 1930. It took a year to get it through, very similar to what's happened with Donald Trump now. And with hindsight, those who were promoting it were the business community and people within the Hoover's party at the time. So sometimes well-intentioned ideas can really leave some very, very painful consequences. And I guess that's what you're saying to us now. Just think it through, because what might work in the short term would have a very bad impact in the medium term.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think the Smoot-Hawley example is and should be a very, very strong warning to Donald Trump. I mean, he's got hardly any unemployment in those Rust Belt states, very low, 3-5% at most. Most of America's economic growth is in services, not goods. They're well out of a barter or trading economy, which his tariff regime is based on. It is quite an extraordinary act of self-immolation, as I see it. He's basing it on a kind of barter trade tariff regime, which has long been part of history.
Yeah, and supported by people who maybe see things through different glasses. Helen Ziller is the chair of the Federal Executive at the Democratic Alliance. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.